Yeah.
So SJN, that's you, eh? Scott J. Norris Wiki.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So there it is. I'll just see if it comes up. It should come up.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sounds better on headphones. When you play it through your speakers, there's a bit of a hum from all the technology patchwork that we do to get these things going. But
it's the hum from, if you don't use headphones, you hear the hum.
You don't hear it so much. If you play it over your speakers, you'll hear kind of just electrical hum sound, you know, like an ohm. And then if you play it through your headphones, you don't have to turn the volume up so much so you don't hear the hum too much.
Oh, that's it.
I'll let you see. I'll play it for I'll see.
No, I'm hearing it now.
All right.
I've got it going, so it works. That's good. Oh, I don't know when I'm listening to it, but I'll listen to it. It'll be fun to listen to it.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it will be. I'll listen to it this week, too.
Okay, so we're looking at the pictures.
Yeah, let me get them up.
Look at Bob in London first.
Oh, yeah. There you are at your computer.
Yeah, that's Sue's. The flight at Air Canada flight attendants get to stay in this hotel.
Sue went to London with you?
She flew to Paris and then maybe back. Anyway, she ended up in London. I think it was not professionally. It was on a vacation.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Did you guys travel together?
No, but she did fly. When I went to London, we flew from Halifax to Toronto together.
Oh, okay.
She only got on there because there was a storm in Newfoundland, so the normal passenger list wasn't filled up, so Sue was going standby. It didn't look like she'd get on, but then because of that, she got on, so it was the first time in our life we ever flew together beside each other as passengers.
Right. She flies for free?
Yeah. She gets,
That's cool.
Pretty free.
Yeah.
And she was over in London a week later,
mm-hmm.
And her son came out from Spain.
Oh.
You know about her son has this album of.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we're in the hotel room, which is in the buildings in the richest part of one of the wealthier parts of London, and nearby was Paul McCartney, Sir Paul McCartney's home. She walked me over and showed his place.
Yeah.
So that's her computer.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just checking my email while waiting for her to get ready. Then we walk through what's called Regent's Park, I think, and that's me in the park. And then she stopped to have a cappuccino, so I had a cappuccino the first time in my life.
What did it do to you?
I got wiped out. No, I pretended it. Actually, I liked it, and it didn't affect me, but I pretended I got wiped out.
Uh-huh.
So that's what those photos are about. And then there's a photo of me pointing back to the culprit, to the building where I got the cappuccino.
Right.
And then that's her son with me in her hotel room later that
night.
She took me on a tour of London. We went to the National Portrait Gallery where they an exhibit of Vanity Fair before World War II and Vanity Fair recently.
That guy's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Your average height, man. That guy's huge.
Yeah, he's like 6'5 or something.
Oh, my God. He's a good-looking guy.
Yeah. So he makes me look like an old man there.
Yeah.
So Brendan came in from Spain that night. So after we finished traveling around London going to the gallery, we went back to our hotel and we met Brendan.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when he first got to hang out with me as a mature 20-year-old.
Right.
Last time he was with me was in Halifax. He was a kid, 15 years old.
Wow.
Before that, he came to London, to New York when he was 10 or 11. I walked around the city a bit. So this is our big meeting, and Sue wanted to have him connect with me because she's divorced and the husband puts down me and Carolyn, so she wanted Brendan to realize the other side of Club 22.
Oh.
Or her part of life, which is Club 22.
How did the husband even know you guys well enough to invest in putting you down?
Well, because he didn't. He's an asshole. That's why she divorced him after a year and a half. He celebrated when Carolyn lost her license.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's a total maniac. He's a British-Irish idiot.
And she was only married to him for a year and a half.
Yeah. He was a mistake, but the kid wasn't a mistake.
Right.
So he's an idiot. I've never even met the guy. Neither is Carolyn.
Mm.
he just goes on rumor, and he became a big, heavy, he's an influential guy in emergency medicine in hospitals. So he's a techno-robot.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's us. So Brendan had a successful time with me that night, and then he loved me later. I think I told you he made the videos of me. You remember?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but that's before. This is the 10th. We make the videos around the 16th, almost a week later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one is Garrett. I have here. You saw this. That's pictures, the ones of his face close up.
Yeah.
That's Garrett. That's a photo that someone made at the time of his funeral, a photo that they had taken, and they made this nice picture, and then someone had it blown up and made into a big frame or a big solid thing, you know, 2 feet by 3 feet kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Giovanna had it was made for her, and she gave it to me to take to Costa Rica.
Oh, cool.
So when I had it, Sue took pictures of it.
Yeah.
You're looking at.
Oh. He's got a little bit of a Dolly mustache.
Yeah, yeah. So then the next one is... What's the next one you have?
You're at Dean's tombstone.
Right, and if you look at it, you're looking at it now?
Yeah.
You see the McMichael gravestone behind with the guitar on it? Left?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't notice that. Steve noticed it. Now, Kevin McMichael was a kid who grew up in Dartmouth and went to Dartmouth High School. He actually was part of a number one selling British band in the 80s. So he's a local mainstream hero in music. He kind of did well by being part of a number one hit band, you know?
Died young?
Yeah, he died of cancer. He was only 50.
Oh.
And lung cancer or something. So that's me, that's Sue, and then we go to the next picture is me and this beefy guy.
Yeah.
The beefy guy is the famous Steve Jameson, who I address in Memo to Prince Charles. He's one of my oldest friends, and he's Dennis in the Android Meme Diaries. He was a musician. He was a very handsome guy. He's only, quote, decomposed the past 2 years. Got a health problem, so he's ballooned up.
Mm.
That's not the way he normally is.
Oh.
So we're the first picture is us standing in front of McMenemy's house, who's Flaps, who's one of the kids in the diaries.
Right.
And that house is across from Garrett's.
Oh, okay.
That looks like Garrett's house. Then the next picture where we're standing and there's a yellow house across the way.
Yeah.
That is across from McMenemy's, which is on the left. And that is a famous local brothel.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is a brothel the same as a house of prostitution?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Mm. And so it was closed just recently.
Was it operating legally or illegally?
Illegally.
How do you get to be famous if you're doing something illegal?
Well, it's where everybody went to it, and it was kind of tolerated, but something happened, and they finally busted the madam.
Oh.
So in the next picture is us standing in front of a closer that has the number 69.
Yeah.
Which has a lot of sexual connotations.
Right.
And the little sign says closed. So
yeah.
The brothel is closed.
Mm.
And the people who bought Garrett's house, the young couple, they have stories about the brothel because they live across it, you know.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So that's us standing in front of the brothel.
Did you meet the people that bought Garrett's house?
Oh, yeah. I met him in 2001, and then we had a... We got together with the husband. The wife couldn't make it. She was ill, but could have just come back from Africa adopting a kid. But I showed them all these pictures of Garrett that they'd never seen a picture of Garrett.
Mm.
So Sue Bone had an incredible photo album of all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She has a great archive of Dean Carolyn, too.
Mm-hmm.
The last 30, almost 40 years.
Wow.
So the next picture is us in front of the prostitute's house looking back at Garrett's house on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And then to Steve's, well, to our right is McBenemy's house across the street, right?
Uh-huh.
So this is the corner of Dundas and Queen,
mm-hmm.
downtown Dartmouth.
Mm.
Then the next picture is me and Sue with the Garrett house in the distance, and nice picture of Sue there.
Yeah.
And then the next picture is me in front of Garrett by myself, in front of his house, 64 Queen Street. And I was leaning forward, and so I'm not happy with that picture. I'm looking stiff because I was leaning forward for some reason. They took the picture before I was ready.
Right.
You probably don't notice me leaning. Maybe you know it's pretty.
Well, I can see you're leaning, but I didn't interpret it as being stiff.
Yeah, you might see me. I may be just speaking, right? Looks like I'm.
Yeah, leaning into the camera or something.
Speaking, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's good. It doesn't look stiff. So that's the pictures I sent you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I send you some of Shannon and Garrett, my foster daughter?
No, would like to see those.
Yeah, I didn't send that. That shows Garrett's house. Now, let me just see. Just check this. Yeah, I did. It's called Shannon and Garrett, number 2, 1985. Just, it was sent to you.
Oh, earlier. Here it is. Yeah, their little picture. Yeah, there's Garrett, and she's hugging him, and then they're toasting.
Yeah, that's in the top picture is probably in the kitchen. Then the sitting at the table toasting is in his other living room where he have a lot of artifacts, and you see a few of the artifacts.
Yeah. Is his house kind of like Jerry's place, just all sort of cluttered with weird stuff?
Well, but with art antiques.
Yeah.
You know, the stuff he sold in New York. I mean, huge, not doodads like Jerry's, huge artifacts. He got a huge Buddha, huge, he had Sarah Bernhardt's bed, you know, massive artifacts. We'll probably have pictures of those soon.
How old was Shannon when this was made?
Well, she was actually born the same day, not the same year, as Steve Jameson, January 17th, 1965. She's about 20 there. I think that's about 1985. So, that's
okay.
Now, is there anything other stuff we want to talk about? Other issues that come up on coast to coast, movie consumption?
It was kind of interesting the other night, a week ago, that Steve Quayle was on with Ian Punnett. And he was going on and on about how there's no money left in the banking system, and he knows all these bankers and
the stuff that I said.
Yeah, the stuff and how.
And who's this guy, Steve?
Steve Quayle.
Yeah, who's he?
Oh, they've had him on in numerous capacities, talking about everything from giants in biblical times to. He's a
esotericist.
No, he's just a multi-faceted guy. His voice, his presentation on the radio is a little bit like Dave Emery. He kind of has this business voice tone quality about him, and he speaks with kind of a dry sensibility. And he was talking about how house of cards, and it's all going to come collapsing down in the next few months, and blah blah blah. And Ian Punnett started getting a little irritated with him because he was being so negative. Ian Punnett said, believed that there's probably no money in the banking system and everything, but he said, they'll all get together and agree on something and figure something out. It'll all work out.
Well, they're already doing it, and I talk about it on the cash flow show. Have you been listening to my show?
Which show? With Evan?
On cash flow.
No, I don't even know about that.
Oh, you don't know about what Bob's doing.
No.
Yeah, I keep it secret. But about time you knew about it. You need to hear about this stuff. For me, countering what Steve says, including it, but going beyond it.
Mm-hmm.
James and I conspired in December when I was there in L.A. to me get on his show.
Mm-hmm.
So on January 16th, I started, and on Wednesdays, and they feature me for the whole hour, talking to him and his co-host who owns the station, John Stadmiller. You've never listened to any of their shows, right?
No.
So, let's see... So I'm on for an hour. Sometimes we take calls, if there are any. The thing is, I said, okay, I'm going to go on under a different name to avoid all the Bob Dobbs noise that would come.
Right.
For example, I told you I was on the radio in England, and, of course, they were attacked before I got on, right?
Oh, they were?
Oh, yeah, by the Church of Subgeniuses. They monitor my site, so when I announce I'm going to be on a thing for Monsquaz to tape it, they go nuts and harass the station.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always fun for creating more publicity about it, you know. On a selfish level, it's good for me, but it's confuses these, so the bureaucrats at the station get all confused and what the fuck's going on, you know. So if I take sympathy for them, I don't put it out I'm going to be on, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I usually don't tell that I'm going to be on Eben until the last minute. I tell Monsquash, but I don't let the all-Slack people know because they'll harass the KPFK. They used to do it. So bypassing that, I go on as Bob Neverett.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a name on the chart, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the same style as Bob Dobbs, but it's the same knowledge presented in a sober, like I'm an intelligence operative or person, a consultant with the corporations and all that. So I've been doing it every week since January 16th, so not every week in April because I went away, but now that you know, you should start listening to them, work your way through them.
Well, yeah, send me a link. I don't know how to get there.
Well, what you do, I'll send you this. Let's see. I thought I told you this. I guess I didn't. You're not to tell anybody, okay? These are all secrets.
Okay.
Because there's only, who knows? Well, Steve Jameson knows. People not involved with the Toronto or New York or Five-Bodied World, I tell them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we go like this. So I was going to keep it. I'm keeping it a secret for about a year.
Uh-huh.
Then I'll announce it on Five-Bodied and all Slack, and they'll all go fucking nuts, you know.
Right.
Some of them think that I ain't doing anything right now. I'm just laying back doing nothing. They're going to be shocked to find out that that they tried to get me to consult with they wanted me to help Ron Paul as a result of the radio show.
Hmm.
So the whole thing unfolded. Okay, so this is and of course Walter loves it. You know, Walter's commenting on it as we go along.
From the other side?
Yeah.
How does he get to hear? He's got a radio over there?
Well, I don't know what they got. Apparently, they know what's going on here, but they don't perceive it like we do.
Mm.
According to everybody, I think that's how I would say it.
Mm.
Okay, so I'll send that right now, and then when you get it, I'll show you how to read what I sent you.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think of that? Or, you don't know what to think. Well, you hear these shows, then you'll have something maybe. This
okay, yeah, I got the links here. I mean, I got your email.
Okay, it says, first of all, there's the network. You don't have to deal with that, but that's just it. So I'm on every Wednesday since January 16th up to February 20th. The archives for that is at that URL under number 2, right?
Yeah.
Then for the February 27th show, you got to go to this separate place because they started changing and redesigning the site, so the archives got scattered and deposited and disappeared, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So February 27th, and you should listen to them in order. And it's every week up to the 27th, right up to the 19th. So for March 5th, 11th, no, wait a minute, I did 11. I think I'm leaving one out. Just a second. I was on twice. That should be the 13th also. Let me just check that. Actually, you can click on that.
Yeah.
And you'll get to see their archives, and they actually give statements about the show.
Mm-hmm.
So then you have...
you're on Wednesday the 13th.
And, okay, we're looking at March, right?
I'm looking at February.
Oh, okay, no, click the... Anyways, it doesn't matter. Well, yeah, look at the... forget the February ones. Those are straightforward. Click on the March ones.
How do we get to March from here?
Just under Section 3. Go back to the URL. You see, look at the email where it says March 5th, 11th, Section 4. In the email, right?
I'm looking. March 5th, 11 and 19.
And I realize I make a mistake. I have to add the 13th to that.
Oh, okay.
So, you click on that.
Yeah.
And you can scan. Let's go back down to the March 5th at the bottom, right?
Yeah.
There they talk about John James are joined by Bob Never today. They talk about Citigroup and the teaching of communism in California schools. Then you go up to the 11th, they have a little summary. Mm-hmm. They discuss the origins of the Jewish people and TV body image enhanced through technology.
Mm-hmm.
March 13th, John tells you what it was like 14 years ago on radio. They discuss the Dow Jones recovery, the economy, and Elliott Spitzer. Then it goes up to the 19th. Here Bob explained the mind control manipulation or tactile awareness. It's funny the way they summarize this stuff. You know, it's, I mean, mm-hmm. cute. It's kind of not accurate, but what the fuck, you know, what do you do? Let's see. And then that's all I am in March. And then I sent you the...
So that was the, what is it, the 19th, the 13th.
The 11th and the 5th, four shows.
The 11th and the...
5th.
5th.
I was on twice the week of the 11th. I wasn't on Wednesday, I was on Tuesday and Thursday.
Okay.
So 5, 11, 13, and 19 are four in March. Then I go away. I don't do the 26th because that's the day before I'm going away. I was too busy. And then I'm gone for, what, the 26th, the 3rd or something, and the 10th,
mm-hmm.
or maybe the 2nd and the 9th. So I finally come back on the 16th because I'm back in Halifax, so I did it from Sue Bone's house.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the 30th, I'm back here, and I did it last week. So I would recommend you work it through. It's very interesting. I've got this right-wing KKK guy, John, who's James's co-host. He wouldn't say he was KKK, but he comes out of that mentality. And me and massaging this guy, it's pretty interesting how I do it. I mean, I did the left and progressive for years. Now through this, I do the right-wing side.
Mm-hmm.
Not that
so
James is not right-wing, though.
No. I got the March stuff. Now, what do you got here in April? Which one's in April?
Well, you go back to the email, I give you the thing, you just click on the URL.
Yeah, but it opened up the thing for April, which has got tons of shows in it.
Yeah, they're in order. You just scan down, doesn't it? It's right in order, right? April 1st to the 30th.
Yeah, but which one are you on? Are you on all of them?
Look at the email. What does the email say?
Oh, okay. Hold on.
Tell me what section it is so I know you see the email. In the email, what section are we looking at? For April. In the email.
Okay,
right?
I'm going back to the email. Hold on. Yeah. Okay, it says March. Oh, okay, I see. March, February 27th, and then March 5, 11, and 19, and April 16 and 30. I got it.
And what section is April 16 and 30? What section is it in the email?
Five,
right. Okay. So so you just click on the thing, and you get all the list of April, right?
Right.
So what was it, where were you that you weren't able to get to this list? Oh, you didn't know what date. You got to the list, but you didn't know what date it was.
Right.
Okay, so you see, it says April 16th. They discussed the Android meme, which is essentially the information environment.
Hmm.
Which is accurate, but cute, you know. And then on April 30th, they just say they're joined by me, and they don't say what I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So don't listen to them. I prefer you listen to them in order.
Yeah.
Watch the progression. Because I come on there and they don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's funny.
Right, so they don't know what to ask you?
Yeah, they don't know what to fucking say. And so we begin at the beginning. That's what I love about this. I'm showing a course on air.
Oh, good.
A course of Bob knowledge, in a way.
Yeah.
And how to deal with... Luckily, James thinks he understands it a bit, so his supplementation helps.
Right.
So that's the secret. Don't tell anybody.
Oh, okay.
Don't tell Michael Shields and nobody. I want to keep it as secret as possible.
All right.
You're part of the inner circle, and you can know. And you would get something out of it, because think of this Steve guy's knowledge that you heard last night, and think of that's what he's saying. And,
right.
And Ian's objection to it or frustration with it. See, look what I teach or what I say about it.
That's well, it sounds like you're validating... Stephen Quayle and validating Ian Punnett's objections.
Yeah, and going beyond them to a whole new level.
Yeah. Well, very good. I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad you told me about it. Don't hide stuff from me, Bob. I got to stay informed.
Well, you are being informed. It's just I had to do this for several... I think I've done about 10 shows.
Yeah.
And I had to do it without any slack. I wanted to do it totally without anybody knowing.
Right.
Just see how it went, and if it didn't work, why tell anybody?
Yeah, you don't want goofy Church of the People calling
in
anyway.
No, I'm telling you, even insiders. Keep
right.
it real. I didn't tell anybody till March, March or April.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think I told, you know, some insider. I just knew they had some questions about this and that.
Right.
And I said, no, it's time so-and-so should find this out so he can learn from, you know, he's ready for it.
Right.
And so I'm going to actually, there's one guy on Five Bodies, Foo Fighter, who's a guy who has a company and all that. And he sends me interesting stuff. I don't get to hear it all, but he's well-meaning. He's not an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking today, I'm going to let him in on the secret and tell him not to tell anybody in Five Body, but I think he'll find it worthwhile, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I keep secrets till it's time to do it.
I don't hide
it maliciously. There's a reason.
Well, yeah.
I didn't need the hassle of people thinking about it until I got it going.
Yeah.
And I didn't know I also didn't know if the guy, John, would accept me, you know, would let me stay on.
Right.
Another factor.
Yeah, because if they're trying to sound credible about money, which is a pretty pragmatic subject, you could tilt people's heads.
Yeah. But it's good that James, he knows that what I'm saying is relevant to people.
Once
they get out of debt, which he helps them get out of debt, and they cleared up that problem, then they got to deal with living and the real problems.
Yeah.
The bullshit problems, secondary problems they got themselves into because they never had a clue. You know.
Yeah. What's his name? James Curtis? Is that his name?
Real name, yeah.
Yeah. Was he... So you'll probably be visiting him when you hit L.A., when you get to L.A.
Yeah. So I'll be on again this Wednesday.
Oh, okay.
Every Wednesday. And they post it, like, real quickly. You can... What time do you get up on a Wednesday?
Well, I pretty much... out for the day usually, because then I go to work that night, or sometimes I've been up all night the night before, so I just stay up all day Wednesday and all night Wednesday.
Okay, then.
I don't have any regularity to my schedule.
You stay up pretty late Tuesday, and you might stay all the way through and stay up for 48 hours kind of thing.
Sometimes I'll sleep Tuesday night and stay up all day Wednesday and then go straight to work. Sometimes I'll stay up Tuesday night, sleep all day Wednesday, and go straight to work.
Right, so Wednesday...
But I can always get the archive. As long as I can go back and get the archive, I don't have to hear it live.
No, I don't mean live. I'm telling you that on Wednesdays, 3:30 my time, which would be 12:30 your time,
mm-hmm.
They've got... Yeah, because I'm... And James is on at 11, and I'm on at 2 in my turn. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Same time. He's on at 11, your time, and I'm on at 2. So they put the archive, it seems up like within 10 minutes it goes up on their archive.
Oh, I see. So I could download it on before I go to work and have it that night.
Yeah. So if you get up at 3:30, which is 6:30, my time,
yeah,
that it's on there by then.
Right.
So that's what's good. You can hear it later in the day.
Cool.
So it's interesting. We don't know how. You'll hear the drama and the. It's very funny. I think it's really good what I'm doing in that context, and it's interesting what happens to humans when Bob shows up in their unexpected world. You know,
mm-hmm.
Or their world. Me unexpectedly shows up there. It's really neat what unfolds.
Yeah. Well, it'll be fun to listen to. How long is each episode? An hour. It's about an hour, huh?
Yeah. You can just. There's commercials, so you just fast forward through the commercials.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'm on right away if John isn't there. If not, I'm on after they have it on for 3 or 4 minutes, then they have commercials, then I come on.
Mm-hmm.
When John's usually there, he doesn't let me on until after he makes his opening statement.
Right.
So I got to put in 11:30. I'm just making my little email here. I'm going to update that. So that's anything else? You were going to tell me something, or
no, I was thinking. I'll try to make a note of it. But when you talk to Paris next time, you should ask him if he has, if he what he knows about Gurdjieff, since he's got such a big collection of esoterica, and he knew about Krishnamurti.
Right.
He had any opinions about, you know, would he compare Gurdjieff to Krishnamurti, or would he think they were different? Or, and then you could ask him if he knew Horace Gold, who was E.J.'s father, who was publishing a science fiction magazine in the 40s and 50s. He was the editor of Galaxy magazine, and he was in New York.
Right.
He was part of the New York intelligentsia. I don't know if he was part of the village scene so much. E.J.
Not intelligentsia, intelligentsia.
Intelligentsia, okay. But he would have people like Orson Welles over for poker games and stuff. He was part of that crowd. And then E.J. himself, E.J. was part of the... He spins stories about spending time at the Cedar Tavern. Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
And
he was there.
Yeah, he says he was there when de Kooning and those guys were there, and he always has stories to tell about those guys.
Right.
And he's so observant and has such an incredible brain for details that if he'd ever come across either Garrett or Paris, I'm sure he would remember.
Right.
It'd be interesting if Paris has any recollection of, well, probably wouldn't have known E.J. because E.J. was there, but he wasn't famous.
Right.
He was learning from these guys, and then. But it would be interesting if he knew Horace.
If what?
If he knew Horace Gold, E.J.'s father.
Right.
With his collection of 7,000 books, I would think he would know the editor of Galaxy magazine, or at least he'd know who he was. Yeah, that movie that I saw, the one with about the beat culture, was called The Source.
Okay.
I don't particularly recommend it. He grabbed a lot of film footage from other similar types of documentaries that I saw. It wasn't all original footage. He had a couple things in there that were interesting. But it's, you know, one thing that I thought was interesting was when I watched the... Too bad. I wish you could get a hold of the part two of that documentary where they did all the extended interviews, not only of the people who were in the part one of the documentary, but they did a lot of people who weren't even included in part one. And at the end, there was they did Andy Warhol. It was a brief interview of Andy Warhol. But Andy Warhol said something I thought was really interesting. He said, You know, when I first found out about the Beats and started reading about the Beats, so I thought it was a big cultural phenomenon. And he goes, and then I got to know a couple of these guys. There was Kerouac and Ginsberg, and it was like there's only like half a dozen or maybe a dozen of these guys that made up the whole scene. And then he goes, he looks into the camera, and he goes, and I was confused. In other words, he was confused about, he couldn't distinguish the fact that there were only like half a dozen guys behind this whole thing on the one hand, and on the other hand, it was like a big cultural phenomenon, like everybody was a Beat, you know? He couldn't rectify in his mind how that could be true.
Well, he probably figured it out, and he just stumbled the problem. The media exaggerated it.
Yeah.
And he's showing how a young kid isn't aware of the media.
Right.
Can't distinguish between what the media said and what actually is the content.
Right. Well, or that, you know, a handful of guys could hijack the media and put on like a cultural phenomena as though everybody was a Beat in the 50s, and then he finds out there were only like six Beats, you know, who somehow made themselves as big as the whole culture.
Well, the reason it was seen to be bigger is that the Madison Avenue decided to market them. Jack Kerouac was trying to get On the Road published like for 5 years, and everybody ignored him. And then Sputnik goes up, and in 57, these guys, Madison Avenue says, yeah, let's market this guy.
Mm.
Created by, quote, the Tetrad managers. That's why it's on my chart. And so Warhol wouldn't know that.
Mm.
And they did not hijack the media. They were instinctively resonant with the present the way Paris's gang wasn't, with the effects of TV. TV been around for 5 years. The kids are being mutated. Now you got to have a wacky visceral, kinetic, tactile presentation of oral and visual space via the beatniks.
Right.
And drive around the cars and be speeding on the highways, the Leisure Society. Their image had, like, Paris is partly right. It had nothing to do with culture, in his sense, literary culture. But he didn't go with me on, he didn't have to think about how TV created that. But so you have movie and radio and cars are art forms. The beatniks didn't make poetry. They just yelled and screamed and crafted booklets.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole thing was using new media. So, and that communicated to kids. But they only needed five people to do it.
Right.
And Warhol's expressing that he was didn't understand that. I don't know if he ever did figure it out. We can assume he did. But he's just telling you how his initial reaction was.
Right.
Typical naive kid.
Right. He just goes, you could see, he looked genuinely perplexed. He goes, I was just confused.
Mm-hmm. And because he says was, I assume he isn't. By that time he was confused, but what's good about his opinion is that he's pointing out there's another factor, obviously the media, and he's pointing to it even though he doesn't say it.
Yeah. Right? Now, Ginsberg said that Kerouac did not want to be published. He said none of them wanted to be published. He said when Time magazine came and told us they wanted to do a story on us, we thought they must be really scraping the bottom looking for something because we didn't think we had anything to tell the culture at large, and we were just trying to store up our, he used the phrase, you know, store up our treasures in heaven for ourselves. We had no intentions of being published or being made into, you know, of
that's
being
right.
Found out about.
That shows he did not know that they were useful for others' purposes that he wasn't even aware of.
That's what Ginsberg said. He goes, and then when I found out that our stuff meant stuff to other people, I couldn't believe it.
Right. And it was only, and he doesn't, whereas McLuhan is explaining why it would mean a lot to people. That's where McLuhan's way on a whole better level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these guys don't know, just like all stars. They don't know why they're stars.
Mm.
They're just, they generally say, well, I guess I'm a nice person or good at this, and people like me, I'm lovable. And they don't know the dynamics of sensory biases and that, and changing sensory biases where that image meets a felt need.
Yeah, they become charismatic.
Yeah, how's McLuhan define charisma? Looking like a lot of other people.
Yeah.
And like most people, think charisma is someone in American culture is an individual. He looks like himself. He's cool. He's nothing to do with uniformity. But they don't know that meme of being cool and being individual is what everybody thinks they look like or want to look like. So in an odd way, you do look like everybody if you've got charisma, which you think is individual, but no, you're radiating something that everybody else looks like
mm-hmm.
or wants to look like.
Right.
See, Madonna met the need of the Generation X kids or younger in the post-feminist age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I never got it too much about her.
No, she was nothing. I mean, you know, kids are programmed.
Yeah.
Whatever they hear at 5 years old, they'll like.
Right.
Because it's electrified, and it's a whole different effect more than the particular content.
Right.
And they'll like their different favorites, but they'll never get over that music because they got imprinted on it.
Yeah.
Okay, I got to go. So, is there any other things?
No. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to be able to do tomorrow. I've got appointments that I have to make, and it sounds like you're not sure either.
Yeah. Well, we'll communicate tomorrow. See how it goes.
Okay. But I definitely want to do at least Croker and Dobbs Quadrant before you leave for L.A.
Well, hopefully we'll do it next week.
Yeah, well, yeah. Typically we've been getting one done per session, so that would be two sessions.
Well, we'll see if we can do that.
Yeah, I would like to get that wrapped up.
Don't worry about it. We'll see if we can get it done.
Okay.
So it's good that I ask you about what movies you see, because it just brings up data that you tell me, and that's good, and I can talk about it.
Yeah. The one thing on this movie, The Source, if you haven't seen it, there was some fun film, short, brief, but some fun film footage of Neil Cassady. He was a pretty trippy guy. He was quite a character. He was very, he gyrated and he was very kinetic, and he seem to be always moving this way and that, and sort of pulling the rug out from everybody all around him.
There's actual footage of him doing.
Yeah, that. There's some. You know, it's not. I don't know if it's worth getting the whole thing for just for that, because it's not a lot of footage. But you get to, if you've never seen him before, there is some footage of him.
Right.
And then who's the other guy? Fourth guy, it's not Ginsberg, Kerouac. He was a poet. We brought it up during talking to Paris.
Yeah, Gregory Corso.
Yeah, he said he met that guy. Now that guy's in here. He turned out to be a real asshole.
Yeah.
I don't know how Paris ever got on with him. I would have.
He didn't get along. He didn't say much. He was just back in the '50s. He becomes an asshole in the '60s, '70s, '80s, '90s.
Yeah. Okay. All right, so we'll.
They were early versions of hippies. They were just druggies.
Where did the now? I sort of got the idea where they got, yeah.
They were just druggies.
Yeah, right. Mostly alcoholics, but well, Tim was trying everything he could get his hands on, and so was Burroughs.
No, Corso and Ginsberg and these guys are junkies. They're ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you're transitioning from the radio environment into the TV environment, that'll do it to you. They're kind of in the radio McLuhan retrieval, homeopathic radio stage, aren't they?
Yeah.
And I kind of get where they get their name from, the beats, because it's kind of an extension of jazz and acoustic and the rhythms and all that. But
yep.
How did where does the word hippie come from? Do you know?
I think it comes from hip.
But what's hip?
Oh, you don't know that? That was just like cool and early 60s version.
Well, I know hip turned into to mean cool, but how did it ever a hip is on your next to your butt. It's your hip. What's so cool about that? How does that turn into hippie?
We could say that you're striking a pose, taking a stance with your hip, and it can be the movement of the hip.
Oh, that's true. Well, yeah, Elvis would have been the first hippie, and that if that's true.
Well, that's hip, but then the hippie is more than the hip.
Uh-huh.
It's multi-sensuous, I guess.
Yeah.
It's like, wee! It's like celebrating, having fun, being silly.
Right. Then I can see how yippie is kind of a satire almost on the hippie.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So that's yippie. That's yelling, yay, we're going to take over.
Right.
Well, hippies don't try to take over. They're apolitical. They just celebrate.
Right.
They're frivolous, like blowing bubbles. Remember they blow bubbles?
Yeah, right. And put flowers and
yeah.
Stuff like that.
Okay, man. So that's great. Good bringing up this stuff. I'm glad you keep looking at things so that I can hear about them.
Mm-hmm.
And then talk about them. That's good. Okay, so we're up to date, man. Everything's great. You got the Garrett pictures. There should be some more coming.
Yeah.
And we'll talk tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Okay, then.
Okay, bye.
Bye.